It is Friday, October 12th, 2007. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy for the final night of the week. It is Casual Friday here tonight, folks. You know what that means? We'll be taking your call. We will be completely casual in taking your calls. You want to talk about anything in the world, we will talk about it. Not only is it Casual Friday, folks, it is also... Oh, wait for it. There you go. Let the smears begin. Al Gore wins the Nobel Peace Prize. That's right, folks. Get ready for it. The right-wing machine already gearing up to smear Al Gore. They'll smear the Nobel Prize. They'll smear the Nobel Prize Committee. They'll smear Sweden. They'll smear the Swedes. They'll smear Swedish licorice. Swedish fishies they'll smear. They'll smear the Oscars now, retroactively. The Grammys, forget about it. They're going to smear them. And it won't end there. Get ready for the smearing of the former top general in Iraq who says that the United States is living a nightmare with no end in sight in Iraq. Get ready for him to be smeared. The only person they probably will stop smearing at this point is that 12-year-old boy who's advocating the health insurance program that basically has helped him come out of a coma. We will wrap up a little bit on that as well. But the smears have already begun with Gore. And you knew it was going to come. Of course it was going to come. John McCain. Gore should not have gotten the Nobel Prize. Unbelievable. There he is, the panda bear. The Straight Talk Express gone awry. Trying to placate the meat eaters. The red meat eaters in the right-wing base. It's so easy just to say he didn't deserve it. Now, I wonder if you went back and you looked over the years of Nobel Peace Prize winners. I wonder if John McCain commented on every winner. My guess, first time he has decided to weigh in on the awarding of the Nobel Peace Prize. There is a statement Al Gore has put out from the former Vice President Al Gore today. I am deeply honored to receive the Nobel Peace Prize. This award is even more meaningful because I have the honor of sharing it with the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the world's preeminent scientific body devoted to improving our understanding of the climate crisis, a group whose members have worked tirelessly and selflessly for many years. Get ready for the right-wingers to continue their smears on the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. What was it about? Almost nearly 3,000 scientists who came out and said there's a 90% chance that global warming is man-made. There's a 10% chance it's not, folks. And you know those right-wingers, those 35% who still support George Bush. Maybe it's really closer, to be honest, 29%. But let's not quibble over 6 percentage points here. You know, they're clutching on to that 10% with white knuckles. There's a 10% chance we're not responsible for this. So let's just back off and wait to see until people start to spontaneously combust. Gore went on to say, we face a true planetary emergency. The climate crisis is not a political issue. It is a moral and spiritual challenge to all of humanity. It is also our greatest opportunity to lift global consciousness to a higher level. My wife, Tipper, and I will donate 100% of the proceeds of the war. That's the other thing. They're going to smear him for winning $1 million. And then they're going to smear him for giving it away. We will donate 100% of the proceeds of the award to the Alliance for Climate Protection, a bipartisan nonprofit organization that is devoted to changing public opinion in the U.S. and around the world about the urgency of solving the climate crisis. So there you have it. Congratulations to Al Gore. Congratulations to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. If you right-wingers want to call in and explain to me how the world is only 10,000 years old or 6,000 and there's nothing we can do about global climate change, the number is 800-989-1480. For the rest of you, of course, the number is 800-989-1480. Who's going to lead off? Well, of course, it's the first program on air on Fox, so-called news network. It is the morons at Fox and Friends, Steve Ducey, Gretchen Carlson, and Brian Kilmeade. Here is their takedown. They bring up the fact that Al Gore's movie in Britain is being shown to children, but they've decided to say there's some caveats here, which is fine because it is a presentation of scientific knowledge, and as long as you stay within the realm of science to question it, I don't think anybody would have a problem with it. Of course, the right wing brings out these shamans and freakazoids for the first time, showing respect for anything that is alternative when they come out with their quack science on this. But here's number one.
Here's something extraordinary. What do Al Gore, Yasser Arafat, and that crazy Jimmy Carter have
Hold
in
on.
Common?
Stop this for a second, Ian. We got to play the bell every time they smear something. Because it's not just going to be Gore. All right, so the first up will be they're going to smear the Nobel Peace Prize. This is the first thing. Nobel Peace Prize doesn't mean anything. It's a joke. All right, let's start it up again, Ian.
Won the Nobel Peace Prize?
Yeah, that's exactly right. He won. Mr. Gore won it earlier today. He won a $1.5 million
There's the last five winners, Steve. Mohamed El-Bardi. What do they have in common? I don't know about the 2006 winner, but I will say 2005 and 2007, both anti-Bush.
Yeah, well, and there you got Carter, and then you got all these other people as well. Now, here's the thing about it. Mr. Gore was given the award for his the fact that he's done a lot to spread the dangers, he says, of man-made climate change, and in particular, his movie, An Inconvenient Truth. Now, keep in mind, it's a documentary. It's supposed to be true.
Documentaries are all bad!
In Great Britain, not so true.
A British judge there, Steve, has actually found what he claims to be 11 falsehoods in this documentary. And in fact, did you know that when British kids, before they see this in a school, there's a disclaimer that's read before... There's a disclaimer that says there are 11 falsehoods in Inconvenient Truth. There's another group, Brian, that wants to strip Al Gore of his Oscar because of this.
They want to strip him of his Oscar because the documentary, supposedly, according to this British judge, has 11 mistruths or whatever it is. Yes, go after the Oscar. I love to see the right-wingers up in arms about the integrity of the Oscar process. If you're going to go back and strip somebody of their Oscar, I say English Patient. Frankly, because I can't remember any other winner of the Oscars. And wait, Steve Ducey, he comes back. Not only is he going to quote the British. Now, of course, you never hear them quote the British magazine The Lancet, which suggests that we've killed 750,000 Iraqi civilians. They would never rely on the British for that. But when a judge says that there may be stuff in here that we might want to add a disclaimer, well, then all of a sudden it's the lead story. But what other climate change expert did Steve Ducey consult to comment on the Al Gore Inconvenient Truth film? Here it is, number two.
you know, I'm not a scientist. I don't know if any of that stuff's true. I don't think any of us do. I just know that the thing, my daughter watched the movie last week, Mary, who's a senior in high school, and she said, you know, it opened my eyes to what's going on with the planet. The planet is getting warmer.
But what if it's not happening?
And there's, no, the planet is
definitely
getting warmer.
The argument is why.
Yeah, exactly. Is it man-made? Is it a big cycle or something like that? But my daughter said, you know, I appreciated that he brought it to our attention, the global climate change. But then he said it wasn't going to be political, and yet he took 3 shots at George Bush. And my daughter, who was just 18, was turned off by how it was political. Yeah. So there you go.
I mean, does it come to anybody's... Is it a shock to anyone that Steve Ducey's daughter had a little problem with criticizing the president? I like how they had to inform Brian Kilmeade that, oh, no, the planet is warming. Oh, it is? I didn't get the memo. Roger Ailes, I must be looking at the old memo where we were supposed to deny that the planet was warming. Just hilarious. And, of course, the hits continue. The number's 800-989-1480. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. It's Casual Friday. Anything you want to talk about, let's talk about it. We are back. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. The final night of my week filling in here on Nova M Radio. Streaming live at NovaMRadio.com. The Sammy Cam is in effect at SamCedarShow.com. It's a little bit hinky tonight. We're still working out the bugs, folks. This is what it's about with new technology. Of course, I blame the Swedes. I blame the Swedes and all their Nobel Peace Prizes and their fish and their licorice with salt on it. Sweet Lord. We'll play some more Fox News smearing a little bit later. I am joined on the Sammy Cam by Lauren, and my old friend Josh Orton is in the studio, just buried in a computer. He's waving. He's probably not going to speak tonight. On the program tonight, incidentally, A.J. Jacobs will be here later in the program to discuss his year of living biblically. He lived only by the tenets of the Bible for an entire year. And then, later in the program, a very special guest will be joining us. She gave me my start in radio, and it's not my mom. Let's go to Jim in Houston, Texas, on Sirius Satellite Radio. It's Casual Friday. Jim, what's on your mind?
Sam, I tell you what, I've been listening to you, and I agree with you completely as far as the attack on Al Gore. I don't know why they do it. It's almost like, why do they do it to Hillary? But I've watched Al Gore's film, and the one thing that's probably the most important fact about this film that he does is he talks about the amount of CO2 that's been being pumped into the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an exponential growth, especially if you look from, say, roughly 1940 on up, and the exponential growth of CO2 into this atmosphere, which is unprecedented. Interesting enough, this year, the Northwest Passage opened up so that if you wanted to take a tanker to the Northwest Passage on the northern coast of Canada, you could have done it.
Yeah.
And this was probably the first time it was probably could have done that in thousands and thousands of years on this planet. And, you know, if the neocons want to deny the fact there's not something going on in this country, then they're idiots.
Well, I'll tell you, Jim, they have moved from, I mean, if you tuned into the global climate change debate, you know, maybe a year ago, all of these folks would have been denying that the planet is getting warmer. They realized that position was untenable. So now they deny that it's man-made. And here you have...
So where's the CO2 coming from?
It's coming from cows, flatulence.
That's right. That's right. Well, that, unfortunately, CO2 is not produced by cattle. It's methane.
Well, then it's coming from the Swedes and their production of licorice, Jim. I mean, look, here's the point. The reason why they attack Al Gore on this and the reason why they deny the entire climate change issue is because they are terribly afraid. Now, you remember what happened when we had the ozone problem 20 years ago.
Exactly.
Okay, we had this huge hole in the ozone. There were regulations and laws were passed to cut down on the emission of fluorocarbons. And what has happened? We have actually repaired
the ozone fully. Is coming back.
The ozone is coming back. Now, this is why conservatives hate this topic. It is very simple. If people realize they can band together and with the help of government policy and with the help of people actually taking some responsibility for their existence within the context of the world, if people begin to do that, then what starts happening is you start thinking, well, hey, if we can do this for the planet, we can do this for humanity. And if we can do this for humanity, we can actually band together and affect everyone's lives within the society. And they fear this. This is why they hate Social Security. This is why they hate the notion of S-CHIP. This is exactly what they're terrified of.
Yeah, you know, my feeling is, though, why is Rupert Murdoch, you know, what is he to gain from something like this? To take Fox News and project this philosophy on America? What does he gain from this?
Well, I mean, I think he probably, at the very least, the repeal of the estate tax. And I think it's also, you know, a lot of times it's also just simply a psychological reaction. I mean,
can I say one thing too, as an American, we represent less than 5% of the world's population. We consume over 25% of the hydrocarbons that are burned on this planet on a daily basis. We've got to stop doing it.
That,
I don't care how you do it.
That is heresy, Jim.
The notion
that we should live our lives with some level of consciousness of other people living in the world is heresy to the conservative ideology. The notion that you should live your lives with some consideration that there are other people who live next door to you is heresy in the conservative mind. It is all for one. No, excuse me. One for one. That's about it, I guess, is what it is. Just you for yourself. Appreciate the call, Jim. The number's 800-989-1480. We got a line open now. And like I say, it's Casual Friday. We'll open it up. I'll also tell you about this former general in Iraq who says it's a nightmare with no end. Sam Cedar in from Malloy. Sam Cedar in from Mike Malloy. The number's 800-989-1480. Streaming live at novamradio.com. Check out the chat room there. You can also blog at samcedarshow.com. The Sammy Cam is in effect. We have some debate here that the exactly who gives out the Nobel Peace Prize. Apparently Nobel was Swedish, but it is awarded in Oslo, Norway. So we're confused here, but it's another reason why the right wing will be screaming about how this is all so fraudulent. First it's the Swedes, then it's the Norwegians. Excuse me. I'm channeling right wing mentality here, so that's why I said the Norwayites. Next up in line to be smeared, folks. New York Times reports the former top American commander called the, this is Ricardo Sanchez, retired lieutenant general, In a sweeping indictment of the four-year effort in Iraq, the former top American commander called the Bush administration's handling of the war incompetent and warned that the United States was, quote, living a nightmare with no end in sight. That's fairly unequivocal. I'm trying to see how you could spin that in a positive light. Living a nightmare with no end in sight. Well, at least America is getting good bed rest. In one of its first major public speeches since leaving the Army in late 2006, retired Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez blamed the administration for a, quote, catastrophically flawed, unrealistically optimistic war plan and denounced the current surge strategy as a, quote, desperate move that will not achieve long-term stability. Quote, after more than 4 years of fighting, America continues its desperate struggle in Iraq without any concerted effort to devise a strategy that will achieve victory in that war-torn country or in the greater conflict against extremism. That's a fairly large indictment of the Bush administration. This is my favorite graft. He says, quote, there has been a glaring and unfortunate display of incompetent strategic leadership within our national leaders, adding later that civilian officials have been derelict in their duties and guilty of a lust for power. The White House had no initial comment. Anybody want to guess what that comment ultimately will be? Nathan in Phoenix, Arizona, welcome to the program, Nathan.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Hey, the only reason I called, I enjoy your show. One thing I must say is that as much smearing as the right wing might do, it doesn't really help that you air their smears and then turn around and do the same. I understand what you guys are doing. It's entertaining, but it does seem a little bit like entertainment news in the political sector.
Well, I mean, part of what I do is entertainment as well.
And yeah, you do a great job. I'm not denying that.
And Nathan, I'll tell you why I play this stuff, and I'll tell you why I take a lot of conservative phone calls, is because I really think that one of the biggest problems that liberals have had, and whether you want to call them liberals or, you know, even centrists or progressives or whatever it is, the vast majority of this country is not aware of what is being said within this conservative sort of hermetically sealed bubble. And the problem with it, if it just stayed there, if it didn't mutate and leak out into the mainstream and become actual sort of talking points, then it wouldn't be as relevant to me. But, you know, we saw it with this S-chip smear. You know, first you have Mitch McConnell send this stuff out, smearing this family that whose kid came up there and gave that speech for the Democrats because he had actually experienced firsthand the value of this program. Mitch McConnell's office sends smears to the right-wing blogosphere. Michelle Malkin goes down there and harasses the family. And then the next day on CNN, you've got John Roberts claiming that the Democrats didn't vet this guy enough because apparently the smears are true, when in fact they're complete, utter fabrications.
So you think it's important to call up their smears and show that they're not true?
Exactly.
I think that's kind of pointless. I mean, I think people who are educated and actually do the research and look up more than just one media source will know that it's not true, and it's pointless to honor any of these types
well,
of like.
Well, Nathan,
calls.
I'll tell you what: if everybody was as you say that was as you hope they would be, then I don't think there'd be any of these problems in the first place. But that's not the case.
Very true.
I mean, I appreciate the call, and I don't know what to tell you beyond that. But I appreciate the call.
All right.
Let's go to Bernie in Miami, Florida. Welcome to the program, Bernie.
Hello,
Bernie.
Yes.
It's Casual Friday. Welcome to the program, Bernie.
Yes, I listened to this continual discussion on this station and others, how the Republicans want to take health care away from the children.
Well, I don't know. Excuse me, Bernie,
what?
Hold on for 1 second.
Yeah?
George Bush has vetoed the S-chip bill. In fact, I have to say, to truth be told, there's a veto-proof majority in the Senate, which involves some Republicans, and there's nearly a veto-proof majority in the House, which involves some Republicans.
Right, but the discussion is not because of that. The S-chip program was invented by Republicans 10 years ago. Second point is, all they're talking about is this incredible increase to suddenly the income threshold at $82,000,
Now wait a second. Now wait a second, Bernie, hold on. I'm gonna let you speak. But when you say something like that, okay, I'm gonna have to correct you. Now, when you say the income threshold is $82,000, for a family of how many people?
Four.
Okay, the income threshold for a family four existed only in New York State, and it existed only because of a special waiver granted by the Bush administration, and the most recent recertification of that was denied by the Bush administration. And under this law, if it is passed and the veto is overridden, the only way a family of four making $82,000 can receive the SCHIP grant in New York State, because it's the only state where $82,000 applies, is if the state gets a special waiver from the Bush administration, which the Bush administration has refused to grant. So that talking point, I'm sorry, is not useful for anybody.
Okay. How are they going to fund this?
How are they going to fund it? Well, I believe that the plan is to fund it by using a cigarette tax.
And a cigar tax, a 9,000% increase in the cigar tax.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, so then people
start Bernie, do you smoke cigars?
No, I do not, but it's just unbelievable. They was, oh, well, it's this tax cigar, 9,000%. If anything that you used on a regular basis was taxed increased by 9,000%, you would stop using it, wouldn't you?
Well, maybe I would. And I'll tell you something. If everybody stops smoking cigarettes and cigars, then I would suggest you go immediately to anybody making over $250,000 and bring the tax rate up at least to where Clinton had it.
Why would how would that make it any better?
Well, that's where you would get the money, Bernie.
Okay. You're aware of the fact that the income revenue to the United States government has been the highest in history in the past 12 months?
Are you aware of, Bernie, are you aware of the concept of inflation?
Yeah.
Okay, well, if you go back and look at that in real dollars in inflations, the money has not increased that much. But I'm glad that the revenue is up. That's good. What's the problem?
Because the tax decree increases it, that everybody says, oh, and tax cuts for the rich, which is not. But, those rich guys, like we'll take John Kerry, for example.
Never all right,
pay
Bernie.
Pay less tax than anybody else.
Well, know? Come on.
Clinton.
Just get there.
Clinton.
Get there.
Clinton.
All right, Bernie, I got to say goodbye, but I appreciate this conversation.
Yeah,
it's been very illuminating.
I just can't believe some of the stuff you guys say.
Thank you for the call, Bernie. Let's go to Carlos in New York City, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Welcome to the program, Carlos. It's Casual Friday.
Hooray. All right. What I wanted to talk to you about was, since it's Casual Friday, why the Nobel Peace Prize is actually held in Norway and not Sweden.
Okay.
Norway was actually ruled by Sweden. And when Alfred Nobel made the Nobel Peace Prize, and the reason why the rest of them were held in Sweden and not Norway, and the Peace Prize is held in Norway is because when Alfred Nobel came up with the prize in his testament or will, and that's why. And
right.
He wanted it to be evenly balanced, so he put he put the Peace Prize in Norway and not in Sweden.
Ah, well, thank you very much, Carlos, for clearing that up.
You're welcome.
I can't wait for this to be on Fox and Friends tomorrow when they begin saying that the Nobel Peace Prize is completely illegitimate because the Norwegians had subsumed Sweden and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Jesse in San Diego, welcome to the program, Jesse.
Hey, I got three quick blasts. Dim-witted McCain, who would listen to somebody like that that says, yeah, we should still be in Vietnam? This guy's a POW. That's like saying, yeah, lock me up longer. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, I want to say I have sympathy for John McCain, but I really don't at this point. I mean, the guy's incredible ambition has been thwarted. He tried to join the Democrats three different occasions. He approached John Kerry to be his vice presidential candidate. He thought that he was going to switch to become a Democrat when he thought that the balance of power could be switched to the Democrats, but he was beaten by Jeffords. He has renounced just about every position he's had other than his bloodlust for more war in the Middle East. The guy is going nowhere. He has completely shattered any respect that anybody had for him, not that I was necessarily one of those people. But yes, McCain has become just a pathetic like shell of his former self.
Okay, so next thing. Nobody's reporting on that story of that bioterrorism that Kellogg Brown and Roots doing to the troops in Iraq when they're using refrigerated trailers as temporary morgues, and then the refrigeration unit goes out. They leave the bodies in them. They got to clean the bodies out. Then they use those trailers to haul food to the troops, which is against the law, but nobody's reporting that story. It's out on Truth Out and Vanity Fair.
I haven't seen it, but I'll look into it. I appreciate the heads up on that.
And the last thing is Nancy Pelosi Bush's punk?
Is she Bush's punk?
I think she is.
I mean, you know, there are some things that she's done that I think are all right. I don't appreciate their comments about complaining that citizens are protesting outside her house. You know, I mean, that's sort of the price you pay when you're involved in a democracy. You know, unfortunately, the citizens have mouths and are human beings, and sometimes they have opinions. And I certainly don't appreciate her support for Al Wynn, who's one of these Bush dog Democrats. But, you know, there are other things that I appreciate that she's done. I wish she would put impeachment back on the table. I think the country needs it, frankly. But I appreciate the phone call, Jesse. We got to take a break. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. The number is 800-989-1480. We'll be right back after this. We are back. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. It's Casual Friday on Nova M Radio, streaming live at NovaMRadio.com. The number's 800-989-1480. You know, folks, I've been a little remiss in my conversations with our conservative friends over the past 2 days. The gentleman, his name escapes me now, from Florida, who called earlier and claimed that there was a 9,000% tax on cigars. Now, at the moment, I thought, well, he's just being, it's just hyperbole. He's just exaggerating for effect. But I probably should have questioned him exactly how it was possible that there would be a 9,000% increase on a cigars. So the numbers are the federal excise taxes on large cigars would go from 20% with a cap of 5 cents per cigar to 53% of the manufacturer's price with a cap of $3. For a cigar that retails for $7.50, the new tax would increase the price of a box of 25 cigars by about $100. So if you have 25, you know, $4 a cigar, I guess. It would be for a $7.50 tax would be now $11.50. Well, folks, I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you. There is a cigar tax alert sent out by Cigars International. my guess is that cigar smoking will not be terribly adversely affected by this. And if it is, que sera, sera. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, if I have to say and question whether or not what is more important, providing health care for kids who don't have health care, or making sure that a $7.50 cigar remains $7.50 and does not go up to $11, I am sorry, cigar smokers. I'm going to have to side with the kids so that they don't get ill and they don't die. I know that's heartless of me. I know that's cruel, but that's just the way I feel. Now, I should also say, last night in one of the conversations I had with one of the right-wingers claiming that there was a problem with S-Chip, the first one was complaining that the 12-year-old boy was attacking George Bush by claiming that George Bush was vetoing the bill. And the other guy was saying, how come there is no means test or asset test, I should say, for the S-chip? Now, the S-chip does have a means test. You have to be within 200% of the poverty line to qualify, which is probably somewhere around $45,000 for a family of four. Yes, in some states they get waivers. In New York City, it is $80,000 for a family of four, or it was until George Bush refused to sign the waiver this time around because the cost of living is that much higher. And then the gentleman suggested, well, what if you had a family that had $500,000 in the bank? His argument was, why wouldn't you test assets? Now, in the case of the Frosts, this is the family whose son spoke for the Democrats on this point. They own a house that they bought for $55,000 15 years ago. It's now worth $250,000. The father has a mortgage on a building that cost $190,000 from years ago for the business that he operates. He has a mortgage. I don't know how much has been paid off or not, but let's just assume maybe $50,000 is paid off. So that's $50,000 of equity. They have $300,000 in assets. Maybe they have a couple of cars, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The point is, do we want to live in a country where people have to sell their businesses to pay for their children's health care? Combined income for these two folks is about $50,000 a year. Now, show me the family that has $500,000 worth of cash in their bank account, making $50,000 a year. And I will say, if it is possible to write into the S-chip law, that those families with $500,000 worth of cash in the bank and making $50,000 a year, yes, they should withdraw some of that cash to pay for their children's health care. And I will tell you exactly how many families you will find like that. Somewhere between zero and zero. But this is their talking point. They're clutching to it with white knuckles. We got to take a break. We got calls stacked up. I promise I'll take them when I get back because it is Casual Friday, folks. And I'm feeling so casual, there's a good chance during this break on the Sammy Cam, I may fully disrobe. I hope it doesn't screw up our stream. 800-989-1480, Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy on Novam Radio. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy, NovaAm Radio. It's Casual Friday. We're streaming live at NovaAmRadio.com. Sammy Cam is in effect at SamCedarShow.com. The number is 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. The smears continue. Let's hear Neil Cavuto. Neil Cavuto also is going to be the basically the brain trust behind the new Fox News Network, which apparently, the Fox Business Network, which is touting itself, if you can imagine, as more business-friendly than CNBC. Unbelievable. Who's going to tune into that? All the right-wingers will, of course, and it shall be interesting to see what kind of financial advice they get. Fascinating. But here is Neil Cavuto talking to the right-wing Seth Lipsky, the editor of the right-wing New York Sun, yesterday. Fascinating, in contemplation that Gore may win the Nobel Prize. Apparently, Mr. Lipsky had a different idea as to who would be deserving. Number three.
Is the global warming Warner is warming up Nobel judges to his cause. which kind of ticks off my next guest. He has another candidate, and one he says actually has done something for peace. With me now, I'm happy to say, is Seth Lipsky. Seth is the editor of the New York Sun. Seth, the suspense is killing me. Who deserves it?
Well, we have nominated General David Petraeus as a representative of G.I. Joe. The American G.I. really is a peacemaker. Our G.I.s don't go overseas to conquer. They go overseas to liberate. They go overseas to make peace.
You know, the global view, when you ask about America's role in Iraq, is that he's the guy spearheading a war.
He's not spearheading a war.
I have a different view of it.
But let me ask you this, Seth. The argument seems to be for Al Gore getting the award is for pushing and protecting the environment and for warning and helping us to realize that he could potentially save lives doing that. Is that what the Nobel Prize Committee envisioned when it came up with the Nobel Peace Prize?
You know, I think it's an extremely apt observation. I mean, I can't think of anything more directly responsive to the idealism of the Nobel Peace Prize itself than the kinds of liberation and peacekeeping that our G.I. Joe and G.I. Jane has had as a mission ever since World War II.
So you say General Petraeus, not Al Gore.
I say General Petraeus, not Al Gore. So
there you have it. There you're looking into the minds of the right wing, ladies and gentlemen. The Nobel Peace Prize should be reserved for military personnel. People engaging in war should win the Nobel Peace Prize. Fascinating. Stephen in Miami, Florida, welcome to the program, Stephen.
That was fast. I didn't expect to get on that fast. About Al Gore, I'll make this quick about that, and then I have something else I wanted to mention. Al Gore should run. I don't think he's going to want it, but he'd be the strongest candidate for the Democrats. If he doesn't get the nomination, the second-best candidate to do good in the general election would be John Edwards. And unfortunately, the reason is because a Southerner does a lot better in the South than somebody from another state. That, unfortunately, that's the way this country works. Sam?
Yes.
Okay, I want to mention, you still work at Air America?
On Sundays, I do, yes.
Okay. I don't know if you'll ever get a chance to do this, but just in case there's three people, I'll do this real fast, that I want to deliver a message to three different messages.
Stephen, I'll tell you what. The best way to do that is to send me an email.
I don't have it. If I had a computer, I would. I'll make this real fast, Sam. Trust me. I don't get Rachel Notto down here for over a year now. I wish I did. Just tell her, just briefly, that if all women were like her, this would be a much better world. Second one for someone else, Randy Rhodes.
Right.
Tell her when she says, I only spoke to her once, when she says something, that she should stick to it. And the third person is Lionel. And tell him that he should be something other than a fundamentalist, anti-God person. Because there's a lot of people that he's scaring away from the Democrats with his anti-God talk.
Well, all right. Well, I will work on delivering those messages, Stephen. I must tell you that I actually broadcast from hours away from Air America headquarters. So, but I appreciate that. Maybe they're listening. Let's go to Roger in Capay, California, listening on KSAC. Welcome to the program, Roger.
Oh, hi, Sam. I wanted to comment on Sanchez. You know that. The theme of the surge is working with the warlords was a good choice, and we should have done that originally. And he made a reference to civilians in a sense of power lust, and he's right on line with that. There was arguments inside of Reagan's presidency over Air Force guys trying to get control of the military, and the Marine Corps generals are saying, hey, these guys are just jockeys. And we see the shock and awe. They seem to think that people are going to be afraid of the weapons rather than wanting to deal with them. And Sanchez is correct, too, as far as, you know, no matter what we do, we're going to have to let that cauldron resolve itself. We can step away from that civil violence, but, you know, we're not going to stop it.
I agree with you totally on that, Roger.
Yeah, I'm in support of Al Gore, too. And, You know, when I was an officer in Vietnam, we were only there for 10 months. We got 2 months drops, you know, so he was there for 9.5 months. Nobody gave him any special treatment. And,
that's,
you know,
right.
I think that people should realize that. And when he talked about, you know, the bad things that people did there, he was representing an enlisted body in a sense, and he was taking the heat as an officer. That's what he should have done, and he certainly has taken a lot of political heat for it, you know, but he wasn't speaking for himself. You know,
well,
he was representing the Army. You know.
I appreciate the comment, Roger. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Sam.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye. This piece in the Washington Post builds on a theme that I have been talking about for some time. When you see all this saber-rattling about Iran, I guess I'm moving on to a slightly different topic. But, of course, when we talk about Sanchez saying this former top general, he was the highest-ranked general in Iraq for quite some time. He left the Army in late 2006. And like I say, Ricardo Sanchez gave a speech. He says that after more than 4 years of fighting, America continues its desperate struggle in Iraq without any concerted effort to devise a strategy that will achieve victory in that war-torn country or in the greater conflict against extremism. He says that the Iraq war is that United States is living a nightmare with no end in sight in Iraq. When we talk about Iran and all the saber-rattling, there's only really two issues that should be addressed. One is, and we hear none of this from the mainstream or corporate media, one is, if indeed there are elements in the Bush administration, in fact the entire Bush administration, one cannot say for sure, that actually want to invade Iran or bomb Iran, one must really look upon what the implications are for our occupation in Iraq. The only reason why you would advocate this is if you want a permanent, never-ending occupation of Iraq. No victory, no defeat, simply staying there forever. And if this is simply saber-rattling, where is the commentary, where is the analysis, which clearly shows that the more we saber-rattle, the more we try to influence Iran in this way, the more empowered we make the Ayatollahs and guys like Ahmadinejad. This story out of the Washington Post, more than two dozen Iranian-American and human rights groups have launched an appeal to Congress to reduce or eliminate new financial support of up to $75 million aimed at promoting democracy inside Iran. Do you know who actually administers that money? It is, in fact, Liz Cheney, who apparently has a position in the State Department in the pro-democracy in Iran division, if you can believe it. The U.S. program launched in 2006 backfired in its first year, undermining democracy efforts in Iran and leading to wider repression against activists as foreign agents or traitors, the group said. Among those detained were four Iranian Americans, all charged with crimes against national security linked to the U.S. program. A second year of funding will further endanger democracy efforts, the groups added. Iranian reformers believe democracy cannot be imported and must be based on indigenous institutions and values. Intended beneficiaries of the funding, human rights advocates, civil society activists, and others uniformly denounced the program. Giving tens of millions of dollars to support Iranian activists inside Iran is counterproductive, said Saman Zafari of Human Rights Watch. First, Iranian activists don't want it and can't get it. Second, it supports Iranian government efforts to cast activists as foreign agents. The John McCain song. 800-989-1480. We've got to take a break. I promise I will get to your calls as soon as we get back. Sam Cedar in for the great Mike Malloy, who will return on Monday. Nova M Radio.
Gonna throw some rocks. Tell the Ayatollah gonna put you in a box. Sam's getting pretty hot. Time to turn Iran into a parking lot. Bomb Iran, bomb, 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 bomb Iran, bomb, 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 bomb Iran. The country's got a feeling, really is the ceiling. Bomb Iran, bomb, bomb, bomb.
We are back. Let's get to the phones. 800-989-1480. It's Casual Friday. You can talk about anything you want to talk about. Ellis in Central Oregon. Welcome to the program, Ellis.
Hey, good evening to you, Sam.
Good evening to you, sir.
You know what made Alfred Nobel rich?
I have no idea.
He invented dynamite and nitroglycerin. But at the same time, during his lifespan, he saw the destruction created by his invention in military forms. And that's where he decided to become a philanthropist and give money away as in a peace process. That's what basically is the Nobel Peace Prize.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Now, I wanted to discuss a theory I had with you and see if it has some merit or if you think it's feasible. Now, if we go back in time to the Iranian hostage situation and subsequent Jimmy Carter's ousting, getting voted out, and Bush Sr. and Reagan come into office. At that time, Saddam Hussein and Iraq happened to be our allies.
That's correct.
We were militarily backing them.
That's correct.
Now, I suggest to you and the country that Bush and Reagan talked Saddam Hussein into attacking Iran with the carrot on the end of the stick being Kuwait. This is what I personally believe. I believe that we promised him that he could, if he did this, win, lose, or draw, we would look the other way, and he could take Kuwait back, which once belonged to Iraq.
He attacked Kuwait over some oil fields in that area. And it wouldn't surprise me if there wasn't, maybe not so explicit, but that understanding. I mean, certainly we know that the message was never given to Saddam Hussein. In fact, some people argue the message was given to Saddam Hussein that essentially if you attack Kuwait, you attack Kuwait. We don't get involved in those things. There's actually a story about, I believe, a U.S. emissary going to Saddam Hussein and giving that very message. That this is an Arab thing. It's not anything that that has to do with us.
If I remember correctly, and this is the only time that I ever heard this, was our ambassador from Washington basically came out in the papers and said, we sent him mixed signals.
Yes, absolutely. There's no doubt about it, Ellis. I appreciate the phone call. I got to move on. But I think there's some legitimacy to what you're talking about. Let's go to Tony in Atlanta, Georgia. Welcome to the program, Tony.
Hey, Sam. What's going on, man?
Oh, I'm doing a radio show, buddy. What are you doing?
I'm sitting here listening to the knowledge. Appreciate you, man. Oh. Two things, actually. One, how much help do you think it would be if there's the next president is a Democrat and we have a Democrat Congress? If we were simply to move the election days from a Tuesday to a Saturday, do you think that would help the Democratic Party a lot?
Of course.
I didn't think it would be that hard. And if we have control of Congress and the White House, that should be like the first thing we should do.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know exactly what the procedures to do that, but I assume, listen, it's a federal holiday on Tuesdays. There's no reason not to do
that. The other thing I wanted to run past you is, how do you get poor people to vote against or to actually cut their own throats by voting people into Congress, into office, that represent people that are only wealthy? I think that this was something that was done that by the Republicans or the power elite that has taken decades to get the conscience of America or the middle class people to think that they are represented by millionaires and billionaires, or somehow that by protecting millionaires and billionaires, you're somehow protecting freedom. And I think it's going to take at least the same amount of time, maybe not as long, but a long period of time for the Democratic Party or our structure to teach people that voting against your own self-interest is retarded, and to explain that Republicans are a minority party and they only represent the wealthy.
Well, I'll tell you, Tony, I think, you know, the Republicans classically use things like social issues and fear-based issues, social issues, and in this instance, the global war on terror, as it is, to convince people that that's the most important thing they should be voting on. We're going to take a break. When we come back, A.J. Jacobs wrote a book about his 1 year of following the Bible literally for an entire year. Be right back. We are back. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. It's Casual Friday, folks, on Novam Radio. On the phone, it's a pleasure to welcome A.J. Jacobs, the editor of Esquire magazine, the author of The Know-It-All, One Man's Humble Quest to Become the Smartest Person in the World. I think I interviewed you, A.J.,
on
that book.
Thank you very much.
I got to say, you thought you were really, really smart at that time. But now you've written The Year of Living Biblically, One Man's Quest to Follow the Bible as Literally as Possible. Maybe you're not so smart after all, AJ.
Maybe you're right.
Now, let me ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
I'm sure you get this question a lot.
Right.
But I must ask,
please.
Why?
Well, there were two reasons. The first is I grew up with no religion at all. As I say in the book, I'm Jewish in the same way the Olive Garden is Italian. So not very.
Okay.
But I wanted to see if there was anything I was missing by not having any religion. So, I have a young son. What do I teach him about religion? So that was the first reason. The second reason is that, I was concerned about the rise of fundamentalism. So I wanted, in a sense, to become the ultra-fundamentalist and take everything in the Bible literally to show that this is not the best way to interpret the Bible. Because if you actually do that, then you're acting like a crazy man. You're stoning adulterers. You're stoning astrologers. You're walking around with a huge beard. So those were the two motivations.
So you did this for an entire year. You lived this way, and you're married. You have a child, correct?
Yeah, I was actually. It says in the Bible, "Be fruitful and multiply." So now I actually have three kids. I have twins.
Over the course of a year, you're really getting busy there. And so your wife didn't divorce you over this?
No. Okay. It put a strain on marriage. Certainly there was the beard alone. She wouldn't kiss me for 2 months. At one point, I built a biblical hut in our living room. She didn't like the construction project. But at the same time, there were things that enhanced our lives, like the Sabbath. I'm a workaholic, so not working on Saturday, that made her happy.
Now, so you followed, what is known as the Old Testament or the Torah? Is that it, literally?
Mostly the Old Testament.
Okay.
But I also explored the New Testament for the last 4 months or so.
Okay, well, that makes sense. You sort of graduated. Ann Coulter would say that you perfected yourself. So you follow both the obvious ones and the more obscure ones. Which, did you actually stone any adulterers?
Well, I figured it was a big part of the Bible, this capital punishment, so I had to do something. So I, towards the end, I was walking around getting really into character, so I was wearing my robe and my sandals, walking staff, and this guy came up to me in the park and said, "What are you doing?"
Is this in New York City?
This is New York City. That's where I live, exactly.
All right, so only one guy approached you over the course of the entire year. Right, okay,
right. Yeah, this is a city, probably the only city where you got the Naked Cowboy, you got Gene Shalit, you got a lot of competition.
Right. Yes.
So, but he said, "What are you doing?" And I explained my project, and he said, "Well, I'm an adulterer. Are you going to stone me?" And I said, "That'd be great." So I actually, I had a pocket full of pebbles, because that was sort of, Bible doesn't specify the size of the stone. So I figured this was my loophole. So I took the pebbles out. He actually grabbed them from my hand and chucked them at me. He was an angry old man, like in his 70s, and I threw one back at him. So that was my stoning.
All right, fair enough. Now, which ones were the easiest to assimilate into your lifestyle, and which ones were the most difficult?
Well, you know, the easiest, there were hundreds that I could follow, just like, you know, you shall not take your wife's sister as a second wife, you know, don't plant in your field with two kinds of seed. So these things I was able to do pretty easily.
Yes.
But there were lots of difficult ones. I mean, there's the whole no coveting, no lying, no gossiping thing, which, you know, I'm in the media and in New York, so, you know, that's like 70% of my day.
Right.
So that was difficult. And then the ones like, you know, stoning adulterers or not wearing clothes of mixed fabrics, that was also, you know, I had to get rid of all of my polycotton blends, et cetera.
I wasn't aware of that. And so you actually went to work during this time?
I did. I work at Esquire magazine, so that was another problem. My bosses thought it'd be funny to, like, tempt the Bible guy, so they had me interview this actress, Rosario Dawson, who's this beautiful actress. So I had to try to, you know, interview her without looking at her. And, yeah.
Well, now, so that you weren't tempted, or is that basically?
Exactly. I mean, the Bible is very interesting because there are parts of the Bible that are pro-sex, and there's a section called the Song of Solomon, which is, like, really quite steamy. And there's a line, your breasts are like twin gazelles gallivanting in the lily fields. So, you know, it's not R. Kelly or whatever, but it's, you know, it's for the time. It's pretty racy.
That's pre-Brazier, I guess. I mean, I'm trying to figure out exactly what that means, like twin gazelles. It's never occurred to me. But let me ask you this.
Not a pickup line you could use today, but...
Did you impose things upon your wife as well? I mean, look, here you are. You're living the Bible as you should. I mean, I would think that there's a lot in the Bible that says you have to subjugate your wife in certain ways and that there are times when she has her dirtiness. And you don't want to be exposed to that, right? I mean, that's very problematic.
Right. There are a lot of purity laws, sexual purity laws in the Bible, and I did try to abide by them. And actually, if you take the Bible completely literally, you're not supposed to touch women during certain times of the month, but you can't even sit on a seat where a menstruating woman has sat. So this, when I was trying to follow it literally, I had to carry my own little portable chair around with me because there, you know, the restaurants and the subways, they've all had menstruating women sitting on the seats. So it was and my wife hated that rule, so she, in revenge, sat on every seat in our apartment while she was in her impurity, and so I had to stand a lot.
Did you make her go away from your home for those days?
To the red tent? No. I mean, she was, I could have tried, but I knew that was not going to fly. Because, you know, she said, you can do your biblical project, but I'm going to live a secular life like we always do. So sort of a clash within the household.
And so tell me, how did this affect, tell me, what were the benefits of this experiment? I mean, were there things that you found were actually sort of positive of living this life that is completely dictated for you?
Yeah, I did. I found a lot of benefits, a surprising number. I mean, I went in there very skeptical of religion, and there's still parts, of course, that I have huge problems with. But there are parts that I've been able to incorporate into my life that I think made it better. Like, there is the sort of the moral makeover that I underwent. There's even the spiritual. I started as an agnostic, and now I'm reverend or a minister friend of mine calls a reverent agnostic. So that whether or not there's a God, I believe there's something to the idea of sacredness, that like rituals can be sacred or the Sabbath can be sacred. So there was that. I also learned a fascinating lesson in how behavior shapes your thoughts. So it's almost if you act like you're a good person and pretend to be a good person, you almost become a little bit of a better person. You know, I'm not a saint, but I made a couple of small strides. Like if you stop gossiping, you'll eventually start having fewer negative thoughts about people. So it was fascinating to watch how just the transformation of behaving in a certain way actually really affected me profoundly.
Now that's not always going to work in the case of, let's say, someone theoretically like Larry Craig. You can deny, but I mean, it's some things that you just are, and you have to sort of.
There are limits. That actually one of my favorite parts of the experiment was embedding myself in different communities that take the Bible literally in their own way. So with the Hasidic Jews, I spent time with the Amish, and I also spent time with a fascinating group of gay evangelical Christians, which I thought was an oxymoron, but it's actually, you know, they exist, and they believe that Jesus would not have condemned a loving homosexual relationship.
That's interesting. Now, you know, one of the things that I'm curious about your notion of the sacredness of certain moments. Like, you know, why is it that, you know, what was it that you found beneficial about saying that, you know, whatever the elements of your day you found sacred? What was beneficial? I mean, what were like the emotional payoff there?
Well, one of the big payoffs was just thankfulness. Not taking something for granted. Just the fact that now I'm going to sound like I'm a freshman who took my first bong hit or something. But just the fact that
it's Friday night, buddy. Don't worry about it.
Right. But just the fact that we exist at all, you know, is an amazing thing. And the Bible talks a lot about thankfulness, so I did become sort of an extreme thanker. I was giving thanks all the time, and it's a good way to live because, you know, you start to be thankful for the 100 little things that go right every day instead of the things that go wrong.
Now, you know, one of the things that I've always speculated about why there is, you know, in the sort of more, not necessarily fundamentalist, but orthodox people I have known in terms of orthodoxy with any of these religions, is that there's a real comfort in not having to make decisions.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was fascinating to me. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, no, actually, I just want you to talk about that.
Well, I mean, because at the end of the experiment, when I finally shaved off my beard and put it in a Ziploc bag, you know, I kept it as a souvenir. If you want to talk, I'll send it to you.
No.
But it was, I felt totally unanchored because I had lived it with such a rigid structure. And we all talk about freedom of choice, but there was something to be said for freedom from choice. That was a restricted choice lifestyle because, you know, you would say, should I give 10% of my salary to the needy? Yes. Should I, read this magazine about Cameron Diaz stooping some guy? No. So it provided some real structure. And that's obviously the very dangerous if you follow the wrong structure,
right?
You know, then you'll be hating homosexuals. But
see, that's why I think there's this rise of fundamentalism, because I think it's basically the incredible myriad of choices that modernity offers can become overwhelming to people. And if you wake up in the morning and half your day or three quarters of your day are already decided for you, there's a lot less sort of mental anguish.
I agree. I mean, I think that's a huge appeal. I mean, the interesting thing to me was the balance between choosing and not choosing, because what I found was that you cannot follow the Bible literally. You can't follow everything. You have to pick and choose. Even fundamentalists who claim they're following the Bible, the whole Bible, they're not, you know, because
exactly.
They're not stoning adulterers. So you have to pick and choose. And that's called cafeteria religion by the fundamentalists. But I say there's nothing wrong with cafeterias. You know, I've had some good meals at cafeterias. So it's all about picking the right parts, the parts about compassion and kindness and not about intolerance and hatred.
Well, AJ, I am sure it's a great read. It sounds fascinating. And I appreciate you coming on and talking to us about it. AJ Jacobs, editor of Esquire magazine, the author of The Year of Living Biblically, One Man's Quest to Follow the Bible as Literally as Possible. I can't wait to your next book, which details how your wife is just absolutely sick of you doing these books.
She wants a year of foot massages, she told me. That's
all right, AJ Jacobs, thanks for joining us. We got to take a break, folks. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy, 800-989-1480. In our next hour, a special guest from the Late Majority Report. Open Line Friday, folks. Casual Friday. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. I'll talk about just about anything and approve it. Steve from Trout Bale, Oregon. Welcome to the program, Steve. Thanks for holding for so long.
Hey, man. How you doing, Sam?
I'm doing pretty good. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing good, man. Hey, you're a bad old penny. You and Mike Malloy and Mark Maron, I keep losing you. But you keep coming back.
Exactly. Exactly.
Three coins in a fountain.
That's right.
Hey, man, I'm a truck driver, yeah. And on the road all the time, I see trailers beside me with a mural on the side of them with the Marine Corps recruiting poster.
Uh-huh.
The Marines in their dress uniforms with their swords drawn.
Mm-hmm.
And on one of the swords, down on the blade next to the hilt, there's a Star of David.
Really?
Yes. Do you know what that tradition is?
You know, I don't. But maybe somebody out there does. I mean, the only thing that comes to mind immediately, and I may be wrong about this, but I know that in Ethiopia, I believe they use that star. Because there was some talk that there were lost tribes of Israelites in Ethiopia. In fact, many Ethiopians were airlifted to Israel over the past 20 years or so. And I believe Haile Selassie brought that back in, and I think it had to do where there's a big warrior culture in Ethiopia. That's just my guess off the top of my head, but I wouldn't answer that way in a really important game of Trivial Pursuit. Let me put it that way, Steve. I wouldn't bet any money on it, but...
Okay, I mean, there's no steel industry in Israel that supplies sword quality steel to the U.S. Marines. That's what I wondered.
No, I doubt that very much. I think it's got to be some type of symbol. I'm not sure why they would use that. I mean, that six-pointed star is used for a bunch of different things, but keep listening. Maybe somebody will have an answer.
Okay. Hey, by the way, I have a signed copy of FUBAR with a handwritten note that means
America's
an awful lot to me, Sam.
Well, I'm glad you do, Steve. Thank you very much for purchasing the book or stealing it. Whatever you did, I don't care. I'm glad you're reading it.
Thank you, Sam.
Drive carefully, buddy. Let's go to Luke in Portland. Welcome to the program, Luke.
Hey, Sam. You're doing a great job taking Mike's place for the week, man. Just wanted to congratulate you.
Thank you very much. Now, I said Mike would be back on Monday. He's actually going to be back on Tuesday.
Oh, okay. Tuesday. Great. Hey, listen, you know, some of us out here in the wilderness are keeping up the fight as well, you know, and you may do me the honor of going to YouTube and punching up the word chicken hawk. And you can listen to me confront Matthew Continenti. Does that ring a bell, that name?
No.
Matthew Continenti?
Who's Matthew Continenti?
Oh, he's an understudy for Bill Kristol.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes, well, one of the Weekly Standard guys.
I love it. Google chicken hawk.
I rip him a new one, and it's got 10,000 more viewings than Randy Rhodes' video.
Wow. All right. Well,
yeah.
That's pretty impressive, Luke. I appreciate it. Well, people will Google Chicken Hawk right now. Thanks for the call. Peter Werby will be sitting in on Monday for Mike. We got to take a break. We are coming up against the hard break. Folks on the phone, I will get to your calls as soon as we get back, I promise. The number is 800-989-1480. One more hour. It has been just, I cannot even express to you how much fun it's been this week sitting, at least metaphorically, in Mike Malloy's chair. Not to imply that I've been standing, but I'm just in a different location. Joining us in the next hour, an old friend of mine from the Majority Report. In fact, maybe, if we're lucky, two old friends of mine from the Majority Report. One very attractive one. One not so attractive. Going to take a break. 800-989-1480. Maybe I'll talk about Joe Lieberman in the next hour. We'll be right back after this. We're back. Sam Cedar in for the great Mike Malloy. The number is 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. We are streaming live at NovamRadio.com. You can check out the Sammy Cam at SamCedarShow.com. Lauren's just about to put up a fresh thread on SamCedarShow.com. Just an update on the six-pointed star on the Marine sword. Apparently, it is not a Star of David. It is the Star of Damascus, which is a symbol of steelmakers in the area of Tripoli, perhaps, or perhaps in Syria. Apparently, according to the Mameluke sword on the Marines page, Marine officers would wear swords of any style as long as they were yellow mounted. But that changed in 1805 when Lieutenant Presley O'Bannon and his Marines marched across 600 miles of North Africa's Libyan desert to successfully storm the fortified city of Derna in Tripoli. They were there to put down the Barbary Coast pirates taking a toll on American merchant ships in the Mediterranean. And they decided to take the Star of Damascus. Hey, folks, you remember the greatest story never told. That is that the economy is doing great. According to old Bag of Bones, the dud. Of course, I'm talking about Frederick of Hollywood, Fred Thompson. The IRS, the richest 1% of Americans, earned a record. Post-war record, I should say. You know, we haven't quite reached the Gilded Age yet. 21.2% of all income in 2005, up nearly 20% from just a year earlier. This, of course, is increasing the income gap. The fortunes of the bottom 50% of Americans are worsening.
Surprise, surprise.
That group earning 12.8% of all income in 2005, down from 13.4% from 2004. The data from the IRS does not go back prior to 1986, but research suggests the last time that the rich had this large a percentage of the national income was in the 1920s. Here's President George Bush talking about how the economy's doing great, and unfortunately for him, anyways, and fortunately for the rest of us, somebody at CNN was actually doing their homework. Her name was Kitty Pilgrim, and she's talking about President Bush's speech today in Miami. Number four.
President Bush today pushing hard for trade deals with Peru, Panama, Colombia, and South Korea had a sunnier outlook.
Meanwhile, the U.S. economy has continued to grow. And job expansion has been strong, and hourly wages are on the rise, and the job market for college graduates is bright.
But new IRS numbers point out what many American families have known for years. The rich are getting richer. The middle class is being crushed by debt. Brand new IRS data shows the country's upper income group, the top 1%, grabbing enormous percentage of the country's earning power, 21%, while the middle class is seeing income shrink.
recent numbers that we have looked at show that debt growth has been particularly strong among middle-income families who have seen very slow wage growth but also face rising costs.
New data by the IRS says the median taxpayer saw their income shrink 2% between 2000 and 2005. For the last year and a half, Federal Reserve data have shown Americans are spending all of their income and are using savings or credit to stay afloat. The Federal Reserve points out family financial burdens, basically mortgage and consumer debt, are at historic highs, and the average mortgage alone has doubled since 2000.
High on a hill was a lonely goat herd.
You folks are idiots! Don't you realize it's the greatest story never told?
You know, my favorite thing is where he said that, job prospects for people with college educations are bright. Is that an economic term? It's just above rosy. It's bright, and everybody's doing great. Everybody I talk to, anyways. Unbelievable. And yet the Republicans will tell you over and over again, the economy's doing great. It's the media's fault. Jonathan in Venice, California, how are you? Jonathan.
Well, this is Venice, California, but it's Dr. Dave.
Oh, Dr. Dave. Welcome to the program.
Hey, good to talk to you, buddy.
Good to talk to you.
Digging the Sammy cam for the first time since you've done the wide stance. And I think it's appropriate to mention that Larry Craig will be honored in the Idaho Hall of Fame. That's with an F, fame. Yeah. I think on tomorrow.
As opposed to shame, are you suggesting?
Well, I'm suggesting that. Yeah.
Now,
I want to be too explicit on a casual Friday.
Now, my understanding is, Dr. Dave, that they've actually built an entire replica of the Minneapolis bathroom stall. In the Hall of Fame.
Well, I hope to reach that level of understanding sometime soon.
Yes.
And since this is the Smack Channel, it reminds me to take drugs every 15 minutes, so perhaps that time will be sooner rather than later.
Well,
but I wanted to call, since I've been waiting for a while, to touch on about two points that
Please
came
do.
Up earlier. In your defense, frankly, to two critical calls that might be said to have come from the right. I want to suggest that, in fact, the left, if you will, should not only continue to smear, but should smear more and more effectively and more intelligently and more directly. And I say this as a concerned citizen.
I think there's some real legitimacy to that, frankly.
I think so. And further, I would suggest at the top of the following hour, the very impressive intellectual analysis of the whole Nobel Peace Prize process from Fox and Friends, vis-a-vis the G.I. Joe dolls and all that stuff.
Yes.
Well, would it not follow that the Barbie doll would be a model for further Nobel Peace Prizes? And I refer, of course, to the Klaus Barbie doll, if you're going by Fox, by the high bar that is set by the Fox News service.
Well, touche, Dr. Dave. I think you've got something there. You're definitely onto something.
Well, I thought I was, and I just wanted to check with you to make sure. And finally,
yes,
if I may.
Please.
After listening to the gentleman from Esquire magazine, I never took the Bible literally, although I used to groove on some of its loftier passages, but not again in the literal sense. But I used to take Esquire magazine almost every other word literally, and now I'm rethinking that position.
I think that's probably a good idea. I appreciate the phone call, Dr. Dave from Venice, California. Let's go. We get time for one more quick one. Carrie from Fort Lauderdale, listening on Winds. How's it going, Carrie?
Hey, all right, Sam. Have you been teasing us, us Janine Garofalo's coming on?
Have I said Janine Garofalo's name tonight?
You sure did.
Well, then I expect her to call in. We shall see. It's very possible.
I'll tell you what. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and I miss you from not being on the Majority Report.
Well,
but you don't know how many nights I hung on the phone to hear to talk to her, and she would never get on.
Well, I can assure you, you will not be talking to her tonight, but you will hear from her.
Well, that's good enough.
I do believe.
Hey, when are you going to be doing more shows?
Well, I do a show every Sunday.
I listen to it.
Well, there you go, buddy.
That's not enough.
I know. You got to replay it over and over again. All right. I appreciate the phone call, Carrie. Hang
Keep
in there.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you. I appreciate it. All right, we'll come back. We'll take some more calls, and then we shall hopefully hear from the new star of the hit Fox series, 24. Who? I don't know who you're talking about, Josh, but we'll also hear from Josh. If you are an old Majority Report fan, you may remember Josh. Probably not fondly, but what can I do about that? Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. It's Friday night, casual Friday night, 800-989-1480. We are back. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. Let's go to the phones. It's Friday night. Casual Friday, 800-989-1480. The end of my week-long tenure filling in for Mike Malloy. It has been a pleasure. You folks have been great. Greg in Sacramento listening on KSAC. Welcome to the program, Greg.
Well, thank you, Sam. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
It's a pleasure to talk to you, sir.
It's the first, but you don't pop a thing like Randy does, do you?
I don't. No, but I'll give you one of these. Greg will always remember this. we'll always have this call at 11:21 Eastern Standard Time, 59 seconds.
Oh, you're being too kind.
Well, this is an emotional moment for both of us.
I know. Tears are coming down my face right now, Sam, as we speak.
I understand, buddy. It's Casual Friday.
I was talking to a couple other people, and actually in the beginning of the show, I heard one of your callers. They kind of prompted me to give you a buzz and sit here on hold for a long time. But
yeah, I appreciate your holding.
I've been really disappointed in Nancy Pelosi for quite some time, and it really fried my cookies when after she caved in on not only the war funding bill but the other one. That one was the warrantless. There was another bill.
The FISA, maybe.
Pardon?
The FISA?
No, there was something back earlier in the year that she caved in on. She allowed it to go to a vote. And it was at that point that I knew that I was, and a lot of other people were just absolutely flabbergasted that she would allow that to happen. And ever since then, I have lost a lot of faith in her.
Mm-hmm.
I have told other people on the air that she's, and I didn't think of this word until later, but that she's being really insubordinate with the people of the 8th Congressional District. And I think that's been solidified by when I went on the Buzz Flash last night and saw this story about her complaining mm-hmm. and whining about people that are trying to get her attention and trying to get her to cut off funding to get us out of Iraq and stand up to this moron in the White House. It's just absolutely just disgusting. Her comment was, Well, we have to make responsible decisions in the Congress that are not driven by the dissatisfaction of anybody who wants the war to end tomorrow. Now, if that is not being insubordinate to the people of the 8th Congressional District in California, I don't know what is.
Well, first off, the people in the 8th District in California, they have a remedy for that. She comes up for a vote every 2 years. There is a remedy for that in this case.
Yeah.
I will also say that, you know, I think that with a lot of these people, and I am surprised to say that I think Nancy Pelosi may very well be one of them, but if that's the case, that so be it. You know, what we need to do is, and I certainly think that, you know, as I've been contemplating the potential for Hillary Clinton to be the presidential nominee from the Democrats and maybe subsequently the president, you know, there are people, there are Democrats who need to be to the right of other Democrats to be pulled in that direction. I'm not, please don't mistake me. I'm not apologizing for them. I'm simply saying that what we need to do is, instead of having 72 members of the Progressive Caucus, we need 130 members of the Progressive Caucus in Congress. We need 140 members of the Progressive Caucus. Can we get this in the next election? No. Can we get it in 3 years from now? Maybe. And I think, you know, the bottom line is that there's a lot of people, you know, FDR never went in as a populist, and Johnson never went in as a civil rights guy. But look, what we need to do is we need to create a compelling force that forces these people and makes it that much easier for them to move to the left. I'm not apologizing for these people, but I am I don't want to keep continually banging my head against the wall and saying, why aren't these people as brave or as good or as intelligent as I want them to be? I want to move past that to the point where I'm saying, how can I force them to become more responsive to a more progressive agenda?
And the answer, and I think you hit the nail on the head, you know, she, you know, as anybody who in their job is insubordinate, they're out the door, and they're fired.
They're out the door, and, you know, in the question of how do you push a leader, well, you make sure that the people around her are pushing her that much more intently, and that would be, you know, increasing the size of that progressive caucus. You know, they added, I think, there are 90 people who have now signed a pledge to not refund this war. That is up by almost 20 since July. So there is some progress there. Not as much as I'd like to see, but there is some. When we come back, I have every reason to believe we will be visited by the phone by our next guest. Hope springs eternal. Yeah, it's called a little suspense. Maybe she'll take some calls. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy, 889-1480. Back. Sam Cedar filling in for Mike Malloy. The number is 800-989-1480. Ladies and gentlemen, boiled down to its essence, there's only one reason why I have the opportunity to speak to you via the radio today. That is because I guess it was because my parents copulated, I was born, et cetera, et cetera. But following that, specifically in terms of my ability to be on the radio, I owe it all to one person, That person is on the phone, and her name is Janine Garofalo. Hello, Janine!
Oh, Sam, what a delightful, delightful intro. And it's amazing you were so ungrateful when we parted company over the Scientology battle. Amazing that you could be such an ingrate, especially after I gave you such a wonderful Christmas present that time.
Yeah, I know. It is rather shocking how much I can turn on you, but that's all. Let's let bygones be bygones, Janine.
Sure, why not?
There's no reason to
rehash old wounds.
This is great radio. I had no idea you'd come back on a year and a half later. We could pick up the exact same argument.
I know. Well, you know, it's Friday night. Our last argument was on a Friday.
That's true, actually. It is almost, we picked it up almost exactly a year and a half later to the hour.
I know. So did you want to say you were sorry yet?
Well, Janine, I don't know what I did, but I want to apologize. But I can tell you that Josh Orton has just walked off the show again.
Oh, no. What did you do to him now?
Well, I mean, he'd actually left the show a long time ago, but I'm just saying that.
He walked off afresh this evening.
Well, yes, he just walked off afresh on this whole fight.
Pardon?
He just walked off afresh based on this whole fight. Let's not argue, Janine.
Let's not, especially since I'm only on a cell phone. I wish to God I could have found a landline. I'm in a hotel lobby, and apparently they don't have pay phones even in lobbies anymore. That was the old days. This is the new millennium.
Well, I got to say, you sound great. How are things? What are you doing? You're in California.
I'm in California doing 24.
Now, this is isn't this a big right-wing show?
Well, there's one of the creators is a right-winger, but the other writers are not, and there's no cast members that are right-wingers. But having said that, as nice and funny as that right-winger is, he may push me too far yet.
I know what happens when that happens.
Yeah, then I lose my radio show. But the thing is he is very nice and funny, I have to say, for as wrong-headed as his politics are. But it is actually one of the most pleasant work environments, in all seriousness, I've ever been lucky enough to work in. I love actually going to work there, oddly. And
that is odd, based upon my experience with you working.
Pardon?
I said that is odd.
It is odd, because I don't like to work. And it's an hour commute, so sometimes I have to get up at 3:40 a.m. to make my 5:45 a.m. call.
Wow,
crazy. I love it. I love working there, but, you know, my conscience does bother me at some of one of the show's creators. His name's Joel Surnow, and he is a nice guy, and he's a funny guy, but I don't know how he can be so wrong. I don't know what it is. I've tried to figure out what makes him tick. We've argued face-to-face about it. He's had Lynn and Dick Cheney to the set to visit. He's had Rush Limbaugh to the set to visit.
Ooh.
And he's actually proud of his friendships with them, which I can't understand. I truly don't get it.
Wow, that's awkward. And so did you meet these folks?
Oh, good. No. I do not meet nor shake hands with war criminals. No.
There you go. Quoting Barry Crimmins' book, right?
Why, who better to quote? Exactly. Air America's own Barry Crimmins.
Late of Air America.
Air America, yeah.
And how was also, weren't you on Two Men in a Cradle or something like that?
I was on Two and a Half Men in a Cradle. And that was a long time ago.
It was?
I did that in the summer. It just aired recently, but I taped it in the summer, and that was fun, although I don't enjoy live audience sitcom format. It was a pleasure to work with John Cryer again, who I knew already. And Charlie Sheen was very nice, so that was a pleasant experience. And then I went to Ottawa for a month to do a movie, which, again, was another fantastic experience, oddly.
Janine, let me ask you a question.
Yeah?
How do you folks in Hollywood, how do you come up with your ideas?
How do I come up with what?
Your ideas.
Which ideas?
Well, come on. I was just asking that classic question. Go with me on this.
I'm sorry. I could hardly hear you. My ideas for living or for stand-up comedy?
Yeah, just for comedy.
Oh, you know, I just walk around the town, and ideas just come to me. And speaking of, can I just share one more experience? Two great experiences I had last week.
All right,
week.
Great. I want to hear both of them.
I went to Amoeba Records Wednesday night and saw the band of Horses do an in-store, and they were so good, I cried.
Wow.
And that intro song for when I came in was one of the songs up their first album called The Funeral. But Band of Horses, Sam, I can't recommend them highly, more highly to you.
Band of Horses.
Band of Horses from Asheville, South Carolina, I believe, or maybe it's North Carolina. But
yeah, Asheville is in North Carolina. You know, that's where it's all happening these days. Asheville,
I was going to say, that's where all the great bearded, unkempt hipsters are coming from.
They say that's the new Ann Arbor.
Oh, the new Athens, GA. Whatever it is, whatever's in the water, I want some. Band of Horses. Also,
yeah.
I met one of my idols from high school, Tom Hanks.
Oh,
I met him.
Really?
He was in the lobby of the hotel, and I was thrilled, and he couldn't have been nicer. Just thought, I've been a fan since Bosom Buddies, Sam.
Wow, and you guys, did you hang out? What did you do?
No. I just met him. Didn't hang out with him. I'm sure he's too busy to hang out with me. I met he and his lovely wife, Rita. And it was a treat beyond treats. But, you know, enough about that nonsense. We got to talk about something that's important and germane to the listeners. None of what I've been spewing is important to any of the listeners. So let's talk about some issues, Sam.
Well, I thought you might be interested in this story that is, I guess, I don't know exactly where this comes from, actually. I think it could be from McClatchy. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's from Religion News Services. Majorities of young people in America describe modern-day Christianity as judgmental, hypocritical, and anti-gay. What's more, many Christians don't even want to call themselves Christian because of the baggage that accompanies the label. A new book based on research by the California-based research firm The Barna Group found that church attitudes about people in general, and gays in particular, are driving a negative image of the Christian faith among peoples ages 16 by 20 to 29. Interesting, don't you think?
That's good news. That is what I call good news. I think that it's high time that the right wing of the church, with its intolerance and its cruelty and its justifiable homicides, it should get a bad rap. And I think it should make people examine mainstream religion, because there's just too much unexamined living when it comes to politics and religion going on. And the Christian faith has been getting a deserved bad rap because of the right-wing blowhards who have been dominating the culture and the political landscape for way too long, for the most cynical of reasons. And it's shocking to me when those losers in the Republican Party still cling to that negative message as if it's going to gain traction. It's amazing.
Yeah, I got to say, it's very encouraging that young people are seeing things that way. The book is Unchristian: What a New Generation Really Thinks About Christianity. And, you know, what I'm waiting for, and, you know, I'll wait forever, it will not happen, is the myriad of stories that will come from the corporate media about what Christianity needs to do now to retain its validity in the eyes of young people. I mean, this is pretty astonishing. The vast majority of non-Christians said Christianity had an anti-gay image, followed by 87% who said it was judgmental, 85% who said it was hypocritical. But the faith, listen to this, in terms of active churchgoers, which is really surprising, 80% agreed with the anti-gay label, 52%, over half, of active Christian churchgoers said Christianity is judgmental, and nearly half, 47%, declared it hypocritical. I mean, this
well,
is
sure.
pretty astonishing.
It's not just an image. It's not just an image or a label. That's the truth. The mainstream and right wing of Christianity, just like all religions, the mainstream and right wing is the least examined, the least kind, the least tolerant. It doesn't matter if it's Christianity or you know, being a tree lover, Shinto, Baha'i, whatever it is, the right wing and the center right of most of those systems is intolerant. And there's people that love it that way. There are people that like separation, apartheid living and thinking. They like to be judgmental. They like to be intolerant. And, you know, it's a personality type, and it's got nothing to do with religion. It's got nothing to do with politics, but they find safe haven in the Republican Party and the Catholic Church and in the Jewish faith. I mean, the neocons and the right-wing Jewish movement in this country, Israel, is dangerous for both America and Israel. And the right-wing Christian ethos is dangerous for America and Israel. Those Christian Zionists, or whatever they're called, you can see Jerry Falwell or Pat Robertson urging people to visit Israel and support George Bush and support Israel. That is some of the most dangerous nonsense. those Christian right-wingers that believe that Jesus can't return unless Israel is rid of all the Palestinian nationals.
Yeah, you know, I was just talking tonight, actually, that what's really distressing to me is you have 72-75% of the Jewish population in this country have been against the war and have been, it's probably been the single most stalwart group in terms of against the war, but it's the other 25% that are basically supporting such organizations as Freedom Watch that are putting out these pro-war, pro-attack Iran things. And these the Jewish Republican organizations are
horrible. Oh, they're
worse.
The Jewish Republican and the Christian Republican organizations are dangerous. They're not just dangerous for Israel and America and for Palestinians. They're dangerous for the entire world.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's really problematic. I spoke to you. Remember A.J. Jacobs? He's the guy who wrote that book about the reading the encyclopedia.
The know-it-all.
Yes, he spent the past year living the Bible literally.
Yes, I know. I saw that. I read an article about that at the time.
And he was speaking tonight. We spoke tonight. It was pretty interesting to find out. You know, one of the things that he liked about it on some level, he thought was dangerous though, was the notion that he never had to answer any questions.
That you had to what?
Never had to answer any questions. His day was completely planned out for him.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, you know, when you give your life over to any religion, right, or any dogma of any kind, all critical thinking stops. It just, you know, a lot of people will even say that outright. When I, you know, when I gave my heart over to Jesus, it became simple. I stopped thinking and let Jesus do it. It's, you know, it couldn't be more absurd.
I got to say that when I gave my heart over to my wife, it couldn't have
become the same thing happened for you when you got married, but
it couldn't have become more complicated and difficult.
It couldn't become more painful. In marriage, that's different because people, when they give their hearts over to their spouse in marriage, the problems stay mainly in the home and in restaurants and shopping malls. It doesn't affect the country and the military-industrial complex in quite the same way.
Exactly. Well, Janine, it has been a pleasure talking to you. We've run out of time.
Oh, okay. Well, can I... You know, Sam, again, and Josh and everybody listening, and Billy, the Band of Horses, their first and second CDs. The first one is called Everything All the Time. The second one's called Cease to Begin.
Band of Horses. And when does your show premiere?
After Christmas, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, we're taping episode 4 now. It takes 2 weeks per episode to shoot.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you again soon.
So you can continue not watching it after Christmas.
What's that?
You and everybody else continue not watching it. I don't know anyone in my peer group yet who has seen it.
I'm not saying
that arrogantly. I'm just saying it's one of those things where everybody says, oh, I heard that show was good. I've never seen it.
Or have I? I'm really excited to see Lost.
Oh, I haven't seen Lost yet either, but I heard it's good.
You've never watched Lost?
No, but I'll tell you, there's a show called It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia that is fantastic.
Really? All right, we'll check
that
out.
It's on FX. Hilarious.
All right, it was good talking to you, Janine.
Okay, I'll talk to you later.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Janine Garofalo, folks! Number is 800-989-1480. We'll have time for one call maybe when we get back. Maybe a couple. We'll be right back. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. All right, we got a couple minutes for some quick phone calls. People have been hanging on for a long time. We tried to get Josh on the show, but I can't figure out how to rig up an extra mic in the Sammy Cavern, Cedar Central. Frank in Danbridge, Tennessee. Welcome to the program, buddy.
Hey, Sam. This is Frank in Danbridge, Tennessee. I'm a Teamster. I love your show, buddy. You've done a great job this week.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I just want to say, it really runs all over me that these right-wingers would discount the Nobel Peace Prize as well as Al Gore and all the work that he's done. That just really, really bothers me. I don't understand why they're so mean and hateful Maybe they, who would they nominate for a Nobel Peace Prize? Larry Craig?
Well, you know? I mean, we heard from one right winger who said General Petraeus.
Oh, come on. That's ridiculous.
I know.
Well,
it's pretty sad, isn't it?
I would love to see Al Gore put his name in the hat and run. I think it would blow a lot of their thongs off, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just venting, buddy. I mean, they've got me really wound up, you know?
Are you driving right now?
Yeah.
All right. Well, drive carefully. For gosh sake, don't get too wound up, buddy.
And listen, on Steve Ducey, I think his name says it all, buddy.
There you go. I appreciate the call, buddy. Drive carefully. Drive carefully now.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Alex in Scottsdale, Arizona. Welcome to the program, Alex.
Hey. I was catching Vanity Fair. Have you read it lately, the new article?
No, but somebody else, I think, told me about this article. Just wrap it up for me in 30 seconds.
Okay, KBR used a refrigerator container for a bunch of Iraqi dead people. I guess it stopped working. The guy had to go fix it. They went up, and they said, oh, my God. They got it fixed. They opened it up, could have cooled it down for 4 hours, opened up, and it was full of dead bodies. 2 weeks later, the truck ends up carrying food, or I think it was ice, and about 1,800 pounds of ice was removed, and it was fed to the soldiers and the people of the armed forces.
And it probably got them sick, I would imagine.
Well, they don't know, because there's like 30 different diseases you can get from having dead bodies. Well, there were eyes and fingers and all kinds of stuff laying around that were popping out, because it was in like the summer, you know, during July.
Oh, God. All right, I'll check that article out. It's in Vanity Fair?
Yeah, it's in Vanity Fair, with a cover with John Kennedy and his wife.
All right, well, I appreciate it, Alex. Thanks for the phone call. Bill in Portland, Oregon, you got to do it in 25 seconds, Bill.
I just had to take steps to do a call or a couple calls back saying you shouldn't attack the attackers. These people decided that it was not about representative government. It was about power and control. And if that meant taking the character assassination, taking the quotes out of context and go through the story, just out and out, but anything that
Bill, your phone's breaking up, but I'll tell you what. My feeling is I am done bringing a knife to a gunfight. That's not for me. I'm not going to sit here with this microphone and do that. I think it got us into this problem too much. And if we ever get to a time where there's some type of more civil discourse and what I'm doing is way out of bounds, well, then I'll deal with it then. Steve, you got 20 seconds, buddy.
Happy casual Shabbat.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it.
Okay.
What a perfect 20 seconds. Oop, that was a little loud. Andrew in Portland, quickly, 10 seconds. Andrew.
Yeah, this is Andrew in Portland, Oregon. I don't have a lot of time, but I wanted to, you're probably aware that Barney Frank, who serves in the House, is under fire from some of the radical left-wingers in Massachusetts about excluding the word transgender from.
Yeah, I've heard that, but you know what? I got to go, Andrew. I'm sorry. Running out of time. Mike, Kathy, Ian, Billy, Lauren, thank you so much. It's been a great week. Thanks to all of you. It's been a pleasure. Take care of yourselves, folks. NoVam Radio, thank you very much.